right, it's the second episode of The Library. Yes, that's right, we made it to number two. We made it, fellas.
We made it,
fellas.
Oh!
Well, I say fellas people. Because I, look.
Kids. I know, I say kids.
Yeah, it's, I say, okay. It's the same thing, I can't help it. I call everyone guys, and people get very upset about that. I'm like, well, you all need to calm down. But we are here. We are back at the library talking together about books and things that we love. I'm Kim.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Quinn.
Yes, we are back and our numbers are reduced by one. Rose had to sit out this segment. But, you know, this week we are actually talking about a real book, which is pretty exciting. I'm excited about
that. Two real books.
Well
one real book.
A book and a
I have an interesting turn on what we decided to talk about for our terrible celebrity scribes, but I sort of noticed something when I was reading over the emails and of feedback for our first show. And by the way, those of you who did give us feedback, thank you. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. So far, it sounds like people like the show, which is good.
That's always a nice thing to hear.
Yeah. I mean, nobody sent one saying, please stop. Please stop doing this. So, you know, I guess we should continue.
If they do feel so inclined, they should not tell us to stop, but should tell us, I don't know, what they don't like or something. And then we can mock them on the air. It'll be great.
No.
Well, we were always told that you have to put like two positives and then a negative or something like that. So you don't crush people's self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
Okay. But we haven't gotten enough of the negatives, and so I would genuinely like to hear more of things that people would like to change. I did hear one thing that everyone across the board who has listened to the podcast or even heard of the podcast when I just told them about it, because I do that. I'm like that.
Talkative, sharing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sharing is caring, Kim. It's okay.
I like to share. But they've been telling me that they want this to be a young adult lit podcast. And I don't know. I mean, when we started this, guys, it was sort of like, well, we're going to do all kinds of different books because we're all Harry Potter nerds, but we like to read a lot of different things. So I don't know if we should change it to just being about young adult lit.
I kind of feel like that might be sort of how it starts out regardless,
yeah.
Based off of our reading list that I'm looking at.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't want to limit ourselves, but it might.
Well, you know, remember J.K. Rowling said that she wrote to a growing audience, so maybe in the same respect we can, you know, kind of grow with our audience. So even if we start out in a certain way, we can acknowledge that our audience is hopefully going to be growing over time. You know, and it expanding their literary horizons. And so maybe that's something we might be able to think about for later episodes.
Really, we just want to read good books or sometimes terrible books.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and whichever form those come in, we're going to take them on.
That said, we do all love young adult fiction. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, getting to read some of those books is absolutely not a bad thing. So.
No, not at all. But if you guys do not agree with us and you say, I want nothing but young adult lit, and if you don't give it to me, then I will leave and go listen to a podcast that is similar, even though there aren't any. Hello. So
they might start one. Hmm.
Well, you know, I would like to say, though, that I made one of those demands, and I said that I only want to read Dr. Seuss, and I got laughed at, so...
But that wasn't young adult, Quinn.
That is that young.
That was young child.
Mean,
that was young children.
Children will become adults someday.
Although you gotta admit, it falls into the category of excellent literature.
It does. It does. It does. But, yes, so you guys should get in touch with us via email or our Twitter. And our email is thelibraryshow@gmail.com. Our Twitter is thelibraryshow. If you hate it, you can tell us. We won't hate you, honestly.
And we won't put Quinn crying on the air. You won't have to hear it.
Exactly.
It'll be okay.
Exactly.
We'll edit that part out.
Don't be like that.
Around, pretending we're all grown up. Hey, rich guy.
show, which is
your favorite segment.
It is wonderful. Yes, the terrible celebrity scribes.
Bum, oh. Bum, bum.
Oh. And even though I've named it Terrible Celebrity Scribes, I want to make it very clear, it's not always going to be terrible celebrity scribes. Sometimes it might just be good ones. It might be wonderful celebrity scribes. Yeah. But this week it's a not so good one. But spoiler alert. This week,
are you saying you didn't like the book, Kim?
No, I am not saying that, actually. But let me tell you what we read. If you guys didn't listen to our first show, we read L.A. Candy by Lauren Conrad. If you don't know who Lauren Conrad is, she was on The Hills, an MTV reality show, and you can put the air quotes around reality.
She was on Newport, Laguna Beach, right?
Yeah, she was on Laguna Beach first. That's when she shot to stardom.
Yes.
In the first two seasons of Laguna Beach, which
LC,
were, you know,
LC on yeah. Laguna Beach.
Yeah, they were her finest work, if you ask me. Which nobody is, by the way, and they should be.
Asking you, what is her finest work?
Well, it's Laguna Beach. Oh. And then she moved on to The Hills. She was given her own show because she was just so appealing on camera and people just loved her. So she was given her own show about her making it in the fashion industry.
That's what The Hills is?
Yes, it's her making it. She was an intern over at Teen Vogue. Wonder how she got that. And, Yeah. So basically, it's all not reality, and it's very obviously not reality. And the book is supposed to be a fictional account of two girls who moved to LA, you know, from, you know, the farmland or something, and their best friend.
The farmland of Santa Barbara, right?
Of Orange County.
Yeah, I mean, like, they act like they're just off some sort of a boat somewhere. They're like, oh my god, the bright lights and the music and the... I'm like, come on, you've seen a city before. But they get to LA and they're living their lives, and one of them is Jane. She's blonde and has straight hair, and she's kind of dumb.
She's clearly plain Jane.
Hey, I bet she's very pretty.
Nope. She's just described as cute, but her best friend, what is her name? Charlotte?
No. Scarlet.
Scarlet. See, that's how much of an impression
her best friend Scarlet.
Yeah, her best friend Scarlet is beautiful, and they keep saying that every other line, how gorgeous she is.
Don't forget that she's not only gorgeous, but she hates being gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
And she thinks about it during her chapter where she is the narrator whatever.
Yeah.
When it's in her perspective, how much she hates being so gorgeous and doesn't like to think about it at all.
No.
Except for several pages in her first chapter.
This is a real problem sometimes. I mean, no, I can definitely, I can absolutely understand where they're coming from. I mean, it is tough sometimes when you are so good looking that, you know, you have to think about it all the time. And
absolutely.
Scarlet is like, I know, it's hard.
Yeah. So she and this girl, Jane, end up getting picked up by these TV producers who want to make a show called L.A. Candy, the title of the book. And then they are introduced.
Clever.
Yeah. And then they're introduced to two other girls in a bar. And
is it a reality
show? Turns out. Yes. And then they're, as it turns out, they're also mic'd up and they are now their new friends. And, I mean, essentially, it's a tale of deceit and madness that I'm really not going to go into because...
Wait. So are the new friends not really...
Exactly.
They're real friends?
And the thing that kept happening over and over in this book was that revelation. Wait, this person is only talking to me because they want to be on TV.
What?
Or, wait a second, this whole thing was arranged in advance? You can't be I can't deal with that. Like, every single time, they kept being surprised by, oh, my teacher is wearing new clothes now. Or, that girl's wearing makeup to class. I wonder why. Because she's going to be
clearly,
on TV, honey.
These are questions that we should ponder all the time.
Yeah.
Why is that girl wearing makeup?
No, it was just every single time. And then the biggest problem that I had with this book is that it was just not edited well. And I know that seems like a very strange thing to have the biggest problem be when you have so much just inane babble happening in this, but I felt like it would have been readable had there not been moments where, you know, you have Scarlett coming out of her class, is her first class being taped, and she's really upset because it's completely, you know, disrupted everything, and she's become an outcast, and she's really upset, and she sees one of the crew, and she takes off her mic, and it says, and she pulled up her shirt, revealing her toned tummy, and then her threw the mic. Why was that a necessary addition? Why was that
because
necessary?
Because this book is full of terrible, terrible descriptors.
It's horrible.
They're so bad.
But, Kim, sometimes your tummy is just so toned that it's like, well, sometimes it's your tummy is so toned it doesn't have to be said. Because, you know, it's like it just comes across.
Well, that's the thing. See, I don't hate it. That's the thing that I have to just say. I wanted to hate it, but when I was reading it, I just suddenly thought, you know, maybe I just dislike this book because I feel like I should. Maybe I dislike this book because it's written for people who are used to only reading magazines, you know?
Well, I think that part's perfectly valid to dislike it. I'll tell you why I dislike it, if you want. I don't hate it. Okay. I also have to say I only read the first 45 pages. Okay. Turns out I lied on Twitter.
Very good.
I thought it was the first 40 pages. But no, I made it to page 45 in chapter. Aww. But I hated it because I don't like the characters.
Yeah.
And actually, I didn't hate it. I just don't care.
Yep, I think that's the biggest thing. None of the characters were likable in any possible way, by any stretch of the imagination. I didn't want Jane to hook up with whoever. I didn't care if Scarlett was mad at somebody. I didn't care about Madison, you know, sabotaging this, that, and the other. I just did not care. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I just thought this book was silly. It was ridiculous. But it wasn't ridiculous in a very fun way. And that's the thing that
bothered
me.
No, not in a clever yay sort of way.
But they did make, like, it's part of a series. I couldn't believe it when I was looking at the bookstore.
Not only is it part of a series, it's part of a series that was widely checked out of the library. I was very glad to get the last copy available.
A friend of mine who is very intelligent and, you know, very reasonable, read this book, loved it, and she's now moved on to the second one. And I think that's fine. I'm fine with somebody loving this book. I'm fine with somebody being intelligent and loving this book. I myself, I don't know. I mean, I had to create a whole different scale to deal with the Celebrity Scribes books on a scale of yay to oh my god. And I give it a meh. Just a meh.
You know, we promised last episode, we promised no mediocre books, but I feel the same. It gets a meh.
This is a meh.
I don't like it. I don't care about it.
Yeah, it's not something that I would care to read again. If somebody wants to have this book, you are welcome to it. I'll maybe what I'll do is all of the books that I have to get for the Celebrity Scribes, because I'm actually buying these, I'm not checking them out of the library, I'll put them together in a book pack and give these away on some show.
A celebrity pack, a well-toned
celebrity pack. Oh, it'll be so well, it'll be an 8-pack because that's well-toned.
Oh god, we have to read 8 of these books.
Yes,
wow.
Ma'am.
We really have a situation here.
speaking of which, I was looking at some. If you go to thelibraryshow.blogspot.com, you can scroll all the way down to the bottom of the blog, and you'll see a carousel of different books that are coming up.
I like that thing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. You can see a bunch of books that are on the list to be read in the future. One of those, I think everyone will be excited to know, is the Situations book. Another is The Rules According to JWoww. It hasn't come out just yet. Another is Snooki, A Sure Thing.
Oh, joy!
Yeah, but next week, it's Kardashian Confidential. And yes, that's spelled with a K. Kardashian Confidential.
Not very confident. Like, I mean, if she's writing a book.
Oh, it's not just one. It's not just one. It's Kim, Courtney, and Chloe all together writing a book, and it's called Kardashian Confidential.
You know, that would be like, you might have to watch out for the pirates, because that's a lot of booty to put in one pack.
This section contains significant, important, and potentially devastating literary spoilers. If you have not finished the book, please skip this section or continue at your own risk. You have been warned.
Looking for Alaska by John Green, and I know that Quinn and I are rereading it for this episode, and Kim is reading it for the first time.
Yay!
And I am really excited to hear what you thought about this book, but I guess first we'll do the brief synopsis, yeah?
Okay, yeah.
So I'm going to borrow a plot summary from allreaders.com, and it's short and sweet, and I like it, so I'm going to read it. Miles Halter, a 16-year-old with a fascination for last words, begins his scholastic adventure at Culver Creek Boarding School in Alabama with an introduction to his roommate, Chip Colonel Martin, a trailer-bred genius. Chip nicknames the skinny Miles Pudge and introduces him to Alaska Young, a beautiful, literate, and intellectually gifted teenager with a head full of elaborate pranks. Under the tutelage of his nephew and real under the tutelage of his new and real friends, Miles learns to drink, smoke, escape punishment, and understand people. A few days following a major adrenaline-pumping prank, Alaska drives insanely drunk, crashes her car, and dies instantly. Ooh, spoiler alert. Miles and Chip, both grieving for their lost friend, wonder if she committed suicide or was killed accidentally. Search for evidence of reasons behind her death. They also feel guilty because they were the last people to see her alive and did not stop her from driving drunk. From his experiences with loss, Miles learns valuable lessons about loyalty, friendship, and life. So, that is the book in a few seconds.
That is definitely... That was actually a really good synopsis.
I like it.
Yeah, that was good times. Yeah, so the book... you know, how did you guys feel about it? Did you enjoy? I know you liked it. I do like it.
I'm a big fan of John Green. This is the first John Green book that I ever read, and I read it I don't know, well before like nerd fighting and loving John Green was super popular. And before, let's see, I think Looking for Alaska and Abundance of Catherines were the only things that he had published, the only books that he had published when I read it. And I think rereading it, this was the first time I've reread it since I read it, and I liked it even more the second time. The first time I really liked it, I thought that it was a little bit predictable. So I guess we should explain to readers who haven't read it that the book is formatted somewhat unusually in that it is split into... two sections, one that says every chapter, if you will, is counting down the days before, and all it says is like 186 days before, and then after Alaska dies, each chapter, if you will, says however many days after. So while I was reading it the whole time with the before, I kind of figured it out.
Yeah,
but I would assume most people do.
Yeah. I think so. Quinn, what made you love this book so very, 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 very much? Because you were so into it.
I think when I read it the first time, I was definitely dealing with some somewhat similar things. And you know what? Actually, I didn't. I didn't guess that that was what was going to happen. I didn't really know. I didn't see that coming. And I think that when it happened, especially that scene, the way that the reactions to it, but also the way that, the initial kind of start trying to deal with it, to me is... is
it really is. I mean, I love his style, like you said.
That's interesting. Okay. Well, this was my first time reading this book, and I am not a nerd fighter. I didn't participate in any John Green stuff on YouTube or what have you. I don't watch YouTube videos. I don't care about YouTube stars. And so I just thought, you know, popular guy writes a popular book and everybody in the fandom jumps on it. Yay. So I didn't bother reading this before until the show. I will say that I am glad that I read it. At first I was very, you guys say that you love his style, but it took a while for me to get into it. I'll be honest with you. He uses a lot of metaphors. And so when I write, I'm pithy, and he writes these long sentences that were just like, you know, everything is like or as, and, you know, everything is, you know, she was wrinkled like a woman, or his shirt was wrinkled like a woman who had sat outside in the sun for too long, and all.
I loved that. That was one of my favorite metaphors in the whole book.
But this happened, but this kept happening over and over and over and over and over again. And for a while, it was just sort of tiring. I was like, dude, seriously, I get it. I get it. And then the metaphors started getting really good, though. The metaphors started getting very, very clever. And actually, I have a Kindle now, which is wonderful because it makes highlighting things a lot easier.
I was going to say that there were some of these parts that I thought, like, I was jealous of you having the Kindle so you could
Yes, it's very fun. I've got my Kindle up right now looking at some of the bits that I highlighted. So at about 25%, I'm going to go through percentage-wise and let you guys know how I felt about the book, because I did this as I was reading. Every time I get to a percent, I would write something down. So at percentage-wise, my notes were, teen boys are annoying. I don't really actually like Alaska.
That was going to be one of my questions. I think we should talk about that later. Do we like Alaska?
I'll talk about it. I'll explain the reason why, because this is a very personal reason why I don't particularly like her. I knew that she was going to die at 59% because of the setup of the afterlife in class when they were talking about that. At 65%, I said that I loved the friendship between the Colonel and Pudge. And then after that, I think I got into the book because I stopped writing. At 65%, I got into the book. So, and that was about the time when they really started dealing with her death.
And I think that that's where the heart of the book really lies. I mean, I think that there's a lot of great stuff in the setup, but I think that the points that he drives home are all made in the after part.
Well, and I was starting to mark pages for passages because I thought maybe we would ask, you know, if we like, we could read some of our favorite quotes, or if we don't have time for favorite quotes in this episode, we could put them on the blog. And I realized that, so I was marking my pages with like little tags that I use for school books and stuff. And as I'm just physically looking at them, most of the tags are in the back. You know, and it's funny because I really thought upon my first reading, I thought that I liked the first part better, but I agree.
You know, I completely agree. Like there were some moments in the first half that I thought like that was, I think I tweeted one of the pages in the early 50s.
Do you know why I know 54. It's 54? Because I read it after you tweeted that and I thought, oh my God, this is so, I thought, oh my God, this is so good. And then I look up to save, to put a bookmark in it. I'm like, page 54, Quinn is right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, and again, I as I said, I warmed up to this book and I warmed up to his writing because I'm reading actually a bit that I had saved, one that I had highlighted. And it says, I loved how the sunlight feels warm and rough against your skin like a kiss on the cheek from your dad. And I thought that was perfect. And I loved... I loved Miles's family. His parents are basically my parents. You know, he has a similar sort of relationship to them that I had when I was that age. And so I thought that was interesting.
You know,
stuff that I didn't go
on my second, you know, that's interesting because on my second read through, I thought that the adults were kind of the weakest part. Like, I didn't like Miles's family.
Well, here's the thing. I liked what I saw of them. I thought that there was a lot of, and let's talk about characters now, actually, because.
Good.
With the parents, I thought that was severely underdeveloped. All the adults were sort of like, hey, we're adults and we're dumb. And that, I hate it when anyone does that. I hate it when...
Well, I mean, I didn't think that they were necessarily dumb. I just didn't feel like their dialogue necessarily. It didn't click with me.
Well, no, their dialogue wasn't great, but they also were just sort of like, we're adults and so we're clueless. We don't understand kids and we won't understand them. And, you know, looking at the eagle... I don't know.
Eagle
I just
is
felt
clueless.
I think that that's one of the central points of
the teacher,
book.
Though. The old man teacher is phenomenal.
He's, oh, that was really well done.
Great
oh
character.
My gosh,
he
was so good.
I can't find his name, but And also they set up the Colonel's mom to be a great character
too. Dr. Hyde.
Like she's barely in there, but
oh god, I wish she had been in more of that because mm-hmm. I thought she was so much fun. I in general of the kids, the Colonel was my favorite. He was hands down my favorite.
Mm. Well, but you know, I mean, I think though that when you think back and as a high school boy. For me, that it really was like what school was. And when you're with your school friends, you don't really think about, you know, the parents aren't a big, they're not, it's just, they're not important.
But I'm okay with the adults not being in there that much. I don't quite agree with Quinn that it's because adults are sort of inconsequential when you're in high school, because for me, they weren't. But I agree that maybe when they're at boarding school, you know, the parents aren't going to have as much volume in their life.
Think that's perfectly reasonable. I think that my bigger problem with the character development was of the kids who were not Alaska and who were not the Colonel and who were not Pudge.
Well, like, yeah, they like still had Lara other friends. And...
Yeah, Lara and Takumi. Mm-hmm. Is that who it is?
Sure.
The Japanese guy. I mean, like, they fall off the face of the earth, basically. And again, I know that it's just like when you're reading anything where you have a very emotional protagonist, you're reading it from their point of view. And so, yeah, they probably did basically fall off the earth. And
for
he
him.
Was never that great. He was never that great of friends with the Japanese kid. Lara or Laura.
And to be honest, though, like, he's kind of an awkward, like, kid. Like, he doesn't know how to, he's not a He doesn't know how to talk to people.
No.
He can't really communicate with anybody other than his roommate who puts up with him. But I think to me, like, that's the beauty of John is the way that he can kind of write those characters. The beauty of his writing is that he can write those characters. And to me, they just rang very true because I knew those people in high school. You know, maybe I was one of those people. Yeah. I don't know.
I know those people in young adult life. I mean, beyond high school, in college.
Yeah,
especially.
They're everywhere, mm-hmm. to be honest. You never really grow out of that, honestly. You don't. High school repeats itself over and over and over and over and over again. Your problems are just different, and that's all.
That's because, high school is the little microcosm of intense society. It's just like the rest of society. It's just way more intense.
Yeah. And if you're lucky, you may not have to pay for everything yourself. That's about the only difference. I thought that the rich kids, the portrayal of them, I thought was interesting. I liked that he didn't do it in sort of a Revenge of the Nerds sort of way, like sort of jocks versus nerds, rich mm-hmm. kids versus poor kids. And so the rich kids are all mean and snarling and blah, blah, blah. It showed it from a reasonable point of view. The rich kids were like, this is a prank. Please, let's have a truce.
Right.
Every single time he would say, come on, truce. Every single time Kevin would come in and he'd just be like, okay, truce. And every single time the Colonel would be like, nope, we're going to keep going. And I thought that was really interesting the way that he did it.
Maybe not, but I think that it's important. I think that it's important that the characters aren't all across the board likable. You know, it goes beyond them just like having flaws or something. It's literally like, I don't like mm-hmm. all of these characters through the entire book. Some point in each, you know, in the book that each of them I'm like, oh my god, you're being an ass. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's important.
Before, I did say that I didn't like Alaska, and the reason why I wasn't a big fan of her, just in general, wasn't just because she prompted the long soliloquies from Miles about her boobs. And I thought that was cute, though, the way that he characterized the boy finally sort of appreciating women, you know, like suddenly realizing, oh, that's the attraction. I thought that
the,
was really
the blowjob
cool.
scene. Was
I never
so
wanted
funny.
To be.
That
I,
was probably the funniest thing.
Yeah.
That was awesome. So I loved that. But Alaska in general, I found just phenomenally irritating because she reminded me of every single girl, well, not every single girl, but many of the girls who were in like theater classes mm-hmm. with me. They were all loud, they were all short, they were all busty, and they all wanted to be the center of attention at all times.
I think that from my perspective, I remember when I read it the first time, and it happened to a lesser extent this time, but when I remember reading it the first time and really falling in love with Alaska. Like I think that character, I absolutely did fall in love
with
her.
He's a young boy.
And to a lesser extent this time, that's what it's, and the way that John writes about, you know, that crush, and that's what it was. It was a crush. Like, he had a schoolboy crush on this girl. But to have, you know, she was also a very central figure in his life. And I think that what happened, as far as their relationship together and as far as the Alaska character, I mean, I loved the way that he wrote all of those. And I think it's because I could see people that I knew, you know, because you can see what the attraction is. I mean, I think that he writes it in such a way that for boys anyway, and this is the thing, you know, being the lone guy on the show, I was hoping to, maybe hopefully listeners out there, if we have any male listeners who have read the book, I'd like to hear your thoughts on it, because, I mean, I know that I found myself falling in love with this character. Was that the case with you, and what was it that made you that made you feel that way?
You know, I it's not only that. I mean, I think I kind of felt about her sort of like Pudge did. I mean, not entirely, because I didn't fall in love with her. I alternated between being really annoyed and disliking her and mm-hmm. wanting to protect her. And that's always been my mm-hmm. role when I when I come into contact with the girls that are the Alaskas in my life, and there have mm-hmm. been a few. And the thing is, it's not for me, this book, yeah, in the end, I can't decide whether I like her or not. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. And that doesn't matter, because it's not about her for me.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, this book is about grief and life,
yes.
and dealing yes. with life and grief and depression and hope. And that's really what made me fall in love with it. I mean, what made me fall in love with this book was not so much the characters or the plot, even though usually characters are what does it. And I do enjoy the characters, but there is so much that he says that rings true to life for me in this book.
Absolutely.
And John does it so many times in so many of his books. And yeah, Alaska, sometimes she's a pain in the ass, but I don't care, because her and her, John calls it the manic pixie dream girl, right? Quinn, you've heard this, or I don't know, Kim, you probably haven't, but he calls it the manic pixie dream girl. And the manic pixie dream girl character appears in a few of his books.
I would like to say that this time reading it through, there were moments that I did find myself thinking, like, wow, you are such a kid, like to all of the characters. When, you know, when Pudge and the Colonel are having their fights, and especially when Alaska was being super moody and, like, her mood swings, and I was like, what? Mm-hmm. You're like, what is wrong with you? But then, you know, I was also remembering, Kim, I remembered a conversation you and I had about, I think about Catching Fire in the Hunger Games series, when we were both saying how much we hated Katniss. And then you said, you know, I realized, like, you had that mm-hmm. moment of epiphany. I realized I hated her because it was so true. Because that's the way that a teenage girl acts.
She did a great job. Suzanne Collins did an amazing job of writing a teenage girl.
Mm-hmm.
And John Green did a really good job of writing Manic Pixie Girl, because he brought to mind several women that I know who drive
this girl
absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And because we're seeing this crazy girl through the eyes of a teenage boy who is madly in love with her.
Yeah.
And to me, that was what rang true. That you know, that no matter when you're in love with or, you know, when you have this mad crush on somebody, no matter how stupid they act and what, like, crazy things they do, you don't see that. That's not what you're focused on. And that's kind of where Pudge's narration to me rang true. But I think where Jen is going with the heart of the book is more than the characters, and having to do more with the revelations that
Yeah, and I think that the part that I want to kind of get away from the I don't like Alaska bit because I don't want to focus on that. I don't like her because he did a really good job of writing her.
Yeah,
that's the reason why I don't like her. It's nothing to do with John Green. I want to say the end is what affected me because I lost somebody very close to me at this exact age. And I thought it was very interesting the way that he wrote that grieving process. I'm not going to get really personal about it, but I will say that my process was a lot different, but I saw other people going through pretty much this exact same thing. And I thought it was amazing that he sort of did it. I mean, it wasn't, you know, nobody got all drunk and we didn't all, you know, jump in the car and decide to go try and see what the route was like and all this other stuff. But you did have to, you had to go through some stuff and it took a long time. It wasn't like 3 weeks and everybody was okay, you know, and dealing with that when you're young is different, I think, than dealing with it. Then I think that I dealt with it differently than I would now than I did when I was 16 or 17.
Well, of course.
And they dealt with it the way that they could. And I just thought that was really cool the way that he wrote that.
As opposed to, I think that last time what resounded with me was the writing and, you know, and the process. But some of the smaller things this time had to do with when he talks about after the facts and how the memories begin to dissipate. He talks about the principle of entropy, you know, that things are always breaking apart. And I think he talked about the Buddhist monk who had something about how, you know, how things just eventually disappear into nothingness. He ended the book in such a way that we don't get to find out how, you know, 20 years down the line, how did this affect them? And I liked that. Even you can see 100-something days later, it's not that it gets easier. It doesn't. I mean, it's not that it goes away, but I guess you start dealing with it in a little bit. And when he talks about how, you know, they stop thinking about somebody for a certain period of time and then you feel bad for not thinking about them, I mean, that kind of that process rang very true to me as well.
Well, and he also talks about how he felt relieved, you know, and that is completely true. And I think that the thing about this book is that people will relate to it regardless of whether or not they've lost somebody because that person died or they lost somebody in a different way. And anyone who's had their heart broken,
absolutely,
I think they're, even if their grieving process was different, there are going to be bits and pieces that they pick up and they relate to.
Before we wrap this up, I would like to just take a moment to talk about the kind of the two central quotes, I think, from the book were the two, and I'd just like to get your brief thoughts on the Simon Bolivar quote about how will I ever get out of this labyrinth, as well as the Francois Rabelais. Do you guys know how to actually say it?
I don't know how to say it.
Francois Rabelais, I go to seek a great perhaps. And to me, that quote rings so true to my life, and I keep saying that, but I love that quote because I think that that embodies, for me personally, what my dislike, as cheesy as it sounds, that's like what I want for my life, to seek the great perhaps, to get out there to do it.
A thousand yeses. In fact, maybe that's how you get out of the labyrinth, is you go to seek a great perhaps. I mean, so agreed. And so I read this back in the MySpace days. That can date it a little bit, right? And that was my MySpace quote. It probably still is I go to seek a great perhaps. And I read this before I applied for grad school, and I read this before I got into grad school, and my entire life has changed, not because of this book, but has changed through a process of seeking a great perhaps. Yeah. And I love it. I agree. It's sort of cheesy, and yet it is.
I don't find that cheesy at all. That's actually one of the things that I highlighted here, and I had tweeted, and I was like, yes, because everyone can identify with that, and I think that was a great way to put it.
I feel like if nothing else, actually, this book would deserve a 5, maybe a 6 for introducing us to that quote, because
John says in his little epilogue about Last Words on Last Words, he says, I was born into Bolivar's labyrinth, so I must believe in Rabelais' great perhaps. Do you guys like that quote?
I do.
Absolutely. Basically, what rating would you guys give this book?
Oh, out of what? What's the scale?
The scale is, I like the horn-rimmed glasses. We can do it for the top shelf book.
Yes, but like one, two.
It's one to five.
One to five?
It's a one to five.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I definitely give this four horn-rimmed librarian glasses out of five.
Okay, four out of five horn-rimmed glasses for Quinn and for Jin.
I don't know. This is like trying to grade my students. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do it like on different scales. So in terms of overall, I'm gonna definitely say 4 out of 5. I might go 4.3. You know, it depends. For certain things, a little bit less. But for takeaways and how it made me feel and quotes, it's a solid 4.5.
Yeah, I think I can completely agree with that idea. For me, it also would have been about a 4 out of 5. I enjoyed it much more than I thought I was going to, and it was not just sort of a fan book. It wasn't everybody leaping
well,
on the bandwagon.
And before
for no reason.
before we depart from this, I mean, in terms of not just being a fan book, we should mention that this book won the Prince Award for young adult literature way before John Green was a YouTube star. You know, I mean, this was a valued piece of work before he had a following from YouTube.
Absolutely. So, to wrap it up, we're doing something that I meant to do last week, but we didn't get around to it.
Right.
But we want you guys to be able to sum up your feelings about the book or just something that you took away from the book in 140 characters or less. Basically, write a Twitter post. If you were writing a Twitter post about this book, what would you say? So you guys can tweet that at the library show on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So just tweet that at us and let us know. Mine this week is as follows. Oh, Miles, I only hate her because I wish you were looking for me. So
cute.
And all Jen?
Right. I think I'm going to go with, it's so far from a twoosh today, but that's all right. I'm going to go with, I go to seek a great perhaps to find my way out of the labyrinth every day.
Aw, I like that. Quinn, got one?
No, you're putting me on the spot. I tweeted so many times throughout
you
this
did.
Book, and they were all just
yeah, you did
just quotes from the book. And I think you can take any stinking number of quotes. I think that my
so again, if you guys have tweets to share with us, go ahead and tweet them at the Library Show, and the hashtag is Looking for Alaska
yes.
or LFA. 140 characters or less, you can do it.
You know, and if we find really good ones, we could put it on the blog for, you know,
yep.
preservation's sake. And I think we should, we're going to put our quotes up on the blog too, so don't worry. Go looking for that.
Yeah, we can do that. And of course, follow us on Twitter if you haven't already. I don't understand why you haven't, but please do. The next book that we're going to do next time, in 2 weeks' time, will be The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And this is because it seems everyone I know is reading this right now or has read it or and so on and so forth. And the new movies are coming out, the American version of the movies are coming out. So we'll see what that's going to be like. But I recently read this and I thought it was very interesting. I think it'll be
interesting
to get through.
Yeah,
it's not a mediocre book, I'll say that.
Okay.
And I don't think it's a bad one. No, we'll see what you guys think. I have my issues, so I can't wait to discuss those with you. So do read those, and while you're reading it, of course tweet at us, of course send us emails, and we will get back to you.
Do you think that we should also say something about Girl with the Dragon Tattoo having some very adult, because we didn't talk about controversy.
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo does
have some very, very, very adult scenes in it.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo does, it deals with a lot of subjects. I don't want to give too much away, though, because...
I know, but there are a couple scenes that are very... Yeah. It's an R-rated okay. book. It's an absolutely
R-rated
book.
But it's not in a way that I think is unnecessary, you know? It's not done so that you will keep reading it. It's not done in a National Lampoon sort of way where we just show boobies for the heck of it. Yeah, if you are very uncomfortable with some violence and very uncomfortable with very graphic sexual situations, please don't read it, because it will upset you, basically. I think that's a valid suggestion, Quinn, for sure, for a little warning there for people wanting to read that. It's not a fun little, oh, Pippi Longstocking sort of adventure book.
It's not L.A. Candy? Is that what you're saying?
No, it is not L.A. Candy.
But at the same time, you know, you can... It's not like you're watching a movie and, you know, you have to sit through and watch
it. Yeah, you can easily skip a chapter and you will still get the same sort of things out of it. It's... I don't know. Well, maybe not skip an entire chapter, but skip a few pages here and there, and you should still be fine with it. But, you know, be prepared to have your world turned upside down, maybe, by that book. I think it'll be very interesting to talk about, but...
Or not. Or maybe you don't like it. Send us your
maybe
feedback.
Maybe you hate it. Maybe you thought it was too much. Maybe you thought you couldn't get through the first part of it. I don't know.
Well, I am intrigued to read this now.
I nearly put it down. I will just let you know that.
All right.
But I'm glad that I didn't. I'm glad I didn't.
Spoiler.
I know, I can't stop. I need to stop talking about this book. Guys, just go read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo so we can talk.
Say goodnight, Kim. Say goodnight.
I can't. No, but also read Kardashian Confidential.
Oh, right.
Come on.
Oh, right. Go read that too.
Kardashian Confidential. Yes. And Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Coming mid
Absolutely.
2011.
The library show at gmail.com is where you go to tell us what you think. Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
And you can also get with us via our phone number, which I do not have in front of me. Damn it. It all came apart. Let me see if I can find
something,
it.
Something, something, read.
Oh,
New York City, New
York
State.
Where is it?
10108.
Where is it? Oh, God. I'm going to find this. This is going to be an outtake. Where is it?
While we're outtaking, my cat has decided she has to be on the show.
What?
She's sitting here purring. I don't know.
No. Yeah. Oh, I really should have, like, gotten my cat out of the room. But who cares? I don't know if that's at all appropriate. Okay, I can't find the phone number. Screw that. I'll get to it by the end of the show. I have no idea where it is.
674-READ. It's the library show.
Very good.